This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at Empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. It is Friday, so you know what that means. Nora's on the show. Nora, happy February.
Happy February, Tate.
It's great to
You're
see you.
You're the first to wish me a happy February today, I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Rabbit. Good luck. I hope all things happen well in February. And the good news is that we have good football, Nora, because what people would say are the two best teams, one in the NFC, one in the AFC, are going to play in the Super Bowl. Now, we have a week, obviously, to get our minds mentally prepared to go through all of the many things leading up to this game. But just your gut feeling right now for the Super Bowl, how are you feeling? Who you got in this game? Or are you even at that point to make a decision?
You know, I am. I haven't totally broken down like everything that I think is going to influence the game. But once the Chiefs did what they did against our Ravens, our poor Ravens, Tate, I'm still not over it.
I'm not either. I'm hurt.
But once that happened and once that game really unfolded on Kansas City's terms and Mahomes just did exactly enough to win, not a thing more, not a thing less, but just exactly what they needed to go to the Super Bowl, I just kind of went, oh, this is Tom Brady. Like, this is what that was, where
it's
was
happening
just
again. Yeah.
Until the final whistle, if that guy's not out, you should just assume that he's going to find a way and that he's going to make it. So, like, I have gone from being a total Chiefs doubter. I owe that fan base such an apology. I really did not believe in you. I did not think that this was possible with this group of receivers. They have proven me so wrong. And so now I'm just giving into it and just saying, like, they cannot be stopped. Kansas City all the way. I think they'd prefer a low-scoring game, but I believe in the Chiefs.
Are you shocked that Vegas has the 49ers? Because you would think that Vegas sees the Super Bowl champs currently going back to the Super Bowl, and they would give them the benefit of the doubt, make them the favorites. Are we surprised that the 49ers are actually -1.5 in this game?
Yeah, I kind of am, because if I'm, and I mean, I know nothing about this, right? But like, if the books are trying to predict how people are going to feel about this matchup and therefore where the money is going to go and therefore where their liabilities are going to be. The way that I feel just intuitively is like, if I have the opportunity to bet on Patrick Mahomes as an underdog, I am taking that opportunity. Like, sign me up. So I can't believe he's gone through these playoffs. He'll have been an underdog 3 weeks in a row. And I would bet that the third one turns out the way that the first two did. Yes, I'm very surprised by it.
Yeah, Vegas, third strike and you're out three times in a row that they have decided to give you Pat Mahomes and the points, which is shocking to see.
She's very generous, frankly.
Very generous. Shout out to Vegas. Let's talk about positional matchups in this game. They will not go against each other, but Brock Purdy and Pat Mahomes, I would assume, will be the topic of conversation. So we will be talking a lot about quarterback play. We'll be talking about game changers versus game managers, I'm sure. Do you think it's going to be the Brock Purdy, Pat Mahomes show, or does, you know, Christian McCaffrey or Debo Samuel, does someone else take the limelight away from Purdy?
So I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think McCaffrey is the key to the game. Because to me, really where this game hinges, and there's a couple of different ways that you could play that. This is a really interesting matchup because I think these teams are pretty even, but they are really different. Their strengths and weaknesses are like polar opposites. So it's a real styles make fights game, I think. And Christian McCaffrey is really the key for San Francisco, because if he keeps them in positive down and distances, then that's Steve Spagnuolo defense for the Chiefs, which has been the strength of that team. They can't do what they want to do. They can't tee off. They can't let him get into all of his blitz packages and the way that he gets pressure on quarterbacks and the stuff that he likes to do to just create chaos when it's third and long. Then I think the game is being played on the 49ers' terms. And it's more comfortable for Kyle Shanahan. It's more comfortable for Brock Purdy. It's the way that they like to dictate matchups. So I think that Christian McCaffrey, who had just been traded to San Francisco, he'd been there for less than a week the last time these teams played each other. And he didn't have a great day. The offense was a little out of sync. And I think that it was just a product of it being so new. That is where, especially for San Francisco, I think the crux of the game is going to be. So I think that positional matchup, Christian McCaffrey against the Kansas City run defense that was not tested by the Ravens, and I think was such a fault of that game plan and of Todd Monken's managing of the AFC Championship game. Christian McCaffrey and Kyle Shanahan's ability to try to put some stress on that unit is, to me, a number one what to look for.
Let's talk about if your gut is correct, Nora. If the Chiefs win, where would we rank Pat Mahomes in terms of all-time quarterbacks? And also, is this confirming the fact that the Chiefs are officially a dynasty in the NFL?
If they win, they're absolutely unequivocally a dynasty. I think, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback I've ever seen. Mm. And he, at his absolute best, is a better player than Tom Brady. Now, I've said this a lot this week. The name of the game is to win Super Bowls. It's not to make awesome no-look passes. But here's where it gets interesting for me and where I think the stakes of the Super Bowl, and in the one sense, the stakes of the Super Bowl are not that high for Mahomes, because if the Chiefs lose, they got to figure out how much Travis Kelce has left in the tank. They got to reload at receiver, but pretty much they run it back next year and they will be a lot of people's Super Bowl pick and they will probably be mine and very little is going to change. But if they win and he is 3-1 in Super Bowls and has been to 4 Super Bowls in his first 6 seasons as a starter, then he is outpacing what the Patriots did. So Tom Brady, after 6 seasons as a starter, he'd been to 3 Super Bowls. He'd won all of them. Brady did eventually start 3-1 in his Super Bowl career, but it took a long time to get back to the game. If Mahomes is 3-1 at this point, I think that's better than being 3-0. I think you get an extra, it gets complicated if he loses and then he's 2-2 versus 3-0, and it's how much do you award getting there versus winning the game. But if he's 3-1 and Brady's just 3-0, I think you pretty unequivocally have to say that in the same time frame, Mahomes is outpacing the accomplishments of the Brady era Patriots. And I think if that is true, then we have to sort of start talking about this Chiefs dynasty and this Chiefs dynasty as a thing that could match what New England did, a little bit less hypothetically and a little bit more as a thing that is like very much happening right before our eyes. And that's not to say that winning a third means that you're going to win the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, and then maybe a 7th. But it is to say that up to the point where you can do a 1-to-1 comparison, they're ahead in the race. So I do think in that sense, Mahomes has a real argument for number one on the all-time QB list that he hasn't had before.
Well, Tom Brady defenders will point out that one loss was to Tom Brady on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So
it is indeed true.
I'm sure they'll have a tough time digesting what you just said, but I think it's a very, very valid point, Nora. One last thing on this game. Is this, Andy Reid's final farewell? I mean, we've seen a lot of good coaches leave the game, both at the college level and at the NFL level. Do we think this could be, we've talked a lot about Kelce, how this could be potentially his last game. Do you think this could be a swan song for Andy Reid?
Man.
I hope not.
You know, it's I hope not. And we haven't really heard anything to indicate that. He's got a real shot if he keeps coaching for a few more years of he could get up there in terms of chasing that Belichick record. Sorry, the Shula record that Belichick is chasing, yep. Even if Belichick catches him. The thing that is interesting to me there is, you know, Steve Spagnuolo is such a beloved guy in that Chiefs locker room and with those players, and his defense has really been the thing that has powered them this year. And his hiring, I do think changed some playoff narratives there where they'd fallen short and, you know, they'd lost to Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game in 2018, in part because their defense couldn't hold up. But the way that Spags has rebuilt that unit is exceptional. And he's still not getting any head coaching interest whatsoever because, you know, he's got like a 208 win percentage as the head coach. And I think teams are a little spooked by that. But I do think that the one sort of exception to that would be if he ends up taking over for Andy in Kansas City. And so if Andy did retire, that would be the first question that I would have would be, is the door open for Steve Spagnuolo? Or, and this doesn't have anything to do with Andy Reid, but, or if they win the Super Bowl on the strength of just like an amazing defensive game plan, does that start to open the door for maybe next year or in the future for Spags to get at least legitimate attention as a candidate? Because he said he wants to do it again.
Yeah, maybe we get Spagnuolo and we get Eric Bieniemy there together, a little co-head coach action in Kansas City. Maybe that could be something post Andy Reid. Who knows? There's a lot out there, but hopefully we have Andy Reid back. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Nora about some coaching hires around the NFL. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here with Nora, and we talked Super Bowl. We did not talk about the Pro Bowl. I don't know, Nora, if you have any thoughts on the Pro Bowl quickly.
Skills but we're competition?
Yeah. Are you excited about it?
There's a little like golfing type situation, I think. Kick-tack-toe. Brandon Aubrey versus Justin Tucker.
It feels like a recess episode.
It's field day.
Yeah, right. Field day. Perfect. That is the right way to put it, which is going to be fun to watch, I guess, for all the people that are going to be tuned
into the Pro Bowl. They should take the presidential fitness test.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's what they should do.
Yeah, like the sit and reach. Like, let's see what's going on with everybody. Everyone's most dreaded thing when they were young kids. Shout out to everybody that's going to be at the Pro Bowl. But let's talk about some of the coaching hirings around the NFL. The Commanders are hiring Dan Quinn. Yes, that's right. Dan Quinn, the former Falcons head coach, was there for 6 years, record of 43-42. He is now going to be taken over after Ron Rivera's exit there in Washington. We don't have to grade the hire, Nora, because that's what everybody else is going to do. But does this pop? Is this a good headline? Does this win in the press clippings by hiring Dan Quinn?
I think it's okay.
Okay.
I think one of the things that comes to mind first for me is someone you brought up before, which is just, man, Eric Bieniemy continues to get the short end of the stick.
Right.
He was right there. When he was when he took that, made that lateral move, right, to Washington, the implication was that he was doing it either to clear his path for a head coaching job by getting out of the Andy Reid bubble, which had been held against him, or because there was a coach there in Ron Rivera who sort of needed a successor. And then the team gets sold and it just sort of resets the franchise in a new direction, which I assume is why he ended up not being the guy there. But I just feel bad for the man because he's good at his job and it continues to not work out. But, you know, Dan Quinn, I like Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, I think, is a really good defensive coach. I'm very curious to see how he builds out the offensive side of the ball and how Adam Peters, who he's paired with as GM there, approach the pivotal decision that they're going to make in April about what to do with the number two pick. Because I don't mind this hire at all. I think Dan Quinn deserves another head coaching look, and I like what he can bring in terms of smarts on the defensive side of the ball, but then also just like he's a pretty good leader. Like he's a good even-handed guy. But what I was expecting to be talking about with the Commanders job was here's the guy that they are entrusting to manage the career of, you know, whether it's Drake May or whoever else, the person that they pick at number two overall. And that just because they went defense is a little bit more of an open question of like, okay, how are they seeing that? And how are they going to coach up this rookie quarterback who the hopes of the franchise are really going to be pinned on more so honestly than like who the head coach is. So questions still there, but in general, I like the hire.
And there was the story that came out was Amon-Ra St. Brown, a receiver for the Lions, I guess, was texting, about like, you know, Ben Johnson, what's the next move? What's happening with the head coaching stuff? And then he was like, I'm on the way to the office. I plan to be in Detroit. Job's not finished, right? And that's kind of the media story that came out, which is admirable at some level, right? It almost makes him likable that he feels like he wants to do whatever the thing is in Detroit, which seems like they want to get to a Super Bowl. So it is a very almost like, I guess not martyrdom, but there is a level of respect, I guess, that goes to the fact that he wants to stay as a coordinator. So he will be a conversation point for sure as we move forward. The Seahawks, I mean, a lot of people thought Dan Quinn might be up for that job because of his connective tissue there, but they hire Mike McDonald from the Baltimore Ravens. They get another former DC there. What are your thoughts on him going to Seattle? And what does Seattle look like now without Pete Carroll?
I love this. I absolutely love this hire. I mean, first of all, Mike McDonald, look, he's young.
Yeah.
So there is some degree of you're taking a chance on this guy if you're hiring him to replace who is one of the most experienced head coaches in the NFL. But here's the thing that I think, beyond just the fact that Mike McDonald is really smart, has a great reputation for really good collaborative skills, really good people skills, really good at empowering both his assistants and also the players around him, that I think is a meaningful trait for a head coach. Here's the thing that I think is the cherry on top, because I don't totally think that you should hire a head coach because you want an amazing coordinator, right? Like you don't hire the guy to lead your franchise because they're really good with X's and O's on one side of the ball, because that ends up being, you know, maybe 25% of the job, not even. And all of a sudden other stuff ends up being more important. And
it's like Charlie Weiss, right? That was always the problem. Right. He was this offensive mastermind, but he couldn't do the other stuff, the CEO stuff.
Couldn't do the management, the leadership stuff. I do think that there is a little bit of an exception, first of all, in that Mike McDonald as a defensive coordinator has shown particularly that he is very good against the Shanahan offense. And if you are in that NFC West, and you have the Rams and the 49ers, and that you know, you that's four games a year for you. Having a guy who you know understands that system, and you know, I'm citing the Rams and the Niners, but offshoots of the way that they play offensive football are all over the league at this point. And being able to stop that system is the most important ability for a defensive coach in 2024. You feel good about getting someone in the building who's shown an aptitude for stopping that system. And then beyond that, the Seahawks over the last couple of years have been on this journey where I think it was 2 years ago, Pete Carroll at the owners' meetings, I think it was, talked about how they were, after a long time, moving away from the old Gus Bradley, Legion of Boom, single high world defensively. And they wanted to become more of a Fangio style defense because they looked at that and saw that it was better at stopping those Shanahan McVay type offenses. And also that that was just the way that the league was trending and they wanted to do it. And since then, they have really struggled to implement it. They've drafted actually pretty well, but they, one, you can see that there just wasn't a full-fledged understanding of what the system was. So then they would try to implement it, but then it wouldn't work. And then the personnel wasn't quite right for it. So then they would change their defensive line formations and Pete Carroll would get involved. And they just kept tinkering. And I give them credit for trying, right? Like I actually give Pete Carroll a pretty significant amount of credit for saying, my system doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. Like that's a big thing for a coach to do. And a lot of guys would have trouble doing it, but they never quite knew how to implement the new one. And Mike McDonald is as good as you can get for knowing how to do that. So I'm really curious to see how he manages that roster and whether or not that defense, which has been, I think, less than the sum of its parts for the last couple of years, can really come together under his coaching. So I'm a little lukewarm on the Dan Quinn in Washington. I am in on Seattle and Mike McDonald.
Yeah, that was a great breakdown, Nora. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to have Nora debunk what's happening and what's going on with Tom Brady. Wow, it's happening again. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. You know the game. We have Nora on the show, and we throw some major stories that are happening in the NFL. We have her debunk or make sense of what's happening. And I just want to talk about Tom Brady, Nora, because you've covered this guy.
Tom Brady is one of my favorite topics.
He's a great topic. Well, as we all know, Tom Brady is replacing Greg Olson in the Fox booth. He also just recently merged his TB12 and his Brady brand into a larger company right now. He's got his dad talking about Bill Belichick's personal skills and his inability to talk to people. Everything is turning up Brady right now. What are your thoughts on Tom Brady replacing Olson? Is that going to be a tough transition for him, or will he be great at that as well?
He might be great, but it's going to be a tough transition because Greg Olson is like the best working broadcaster we have.
Right.
And he, because of this previous arrangement with Tom Flippin' Brady, he just has to be the sidekick now. I can't stand it. They need to find a way to get both of these guys on our televisions regularly going forward. If Tom Brady has to be there, like that's fine. And I am curious to see how he'll be as a commentator, but I don't want to live in a world where I don't get to hear Greg Olson calling games.
I feel like Tom Brady should be in the studio, and I don't want to tell him what to do because he is Tom Brady. He's won 7 Super Bowls. He can do anything, but I do think him in studio with Michael Strahan, with Terry Bradshaw, like, you know, I think it's a nice setup, and I think he also would be so good at the studio conversations, and Greg and Kevin Burkhardt have such a rapport with each other already. It might be a little bit shocking or feel a little bit off when he first steps in. So I think he's put a lot of pressure on himself, Nora. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but there's going to be an expectation that's been set because Greg is so good that he should exceed that. And if he doesn't, then, you know, people will come out and start pointing the finger and saying, we want Greg back.
For sure. I mean, I think I'm encouraged by the fact that Brady, especially this season, has pretty openly criticized a lot of quarterback play.
Yes.
Which tells me that, like, look, Tom Brady often is a pretty tactful guy, and he doesn't want to stir up controversy. He doesn't want to say anything nasty. And I wondered if that would make him a very boring person in the booth, because come on, it's Tom Brady. Like, you want the dish, you want mm-hmm. what he is seeing. And he is such an avid perfectionist that I'm sorry, I'm sure a lot of what he sees when he watches football is, what the heck is he doing out there? And you want to hear that commentary. And I remain a little worried that we just won't. But it is encouraging to me that he's been willing to go there a little bit this season. So maybe he'll be great. And I wouldn't be shocked by that at all. My point is just continue to give us Greg Olsen. We need Greg Olsen.
Yeah. Greg said he is going to, quote, take a look at the entire spectrum of opportunities, Nora. That's a great line. I mean, what does the entire spectrum of opportunities for Greg Olsen look like?
I mean, the sky is the limit.
Maybe a podcast.
Do you
want to
get into politics? 2024?
Yeah, he could do a lot of things with that. Greg Olsen, we're pulling for you. Tom Brady, we're pulling for you. One last thing on this, Nora. Is there
Olsen
any...
Swift 24? Yeah,
there you go.
That's their chances.
That's a good ticket. They could win. Is there any chance that Tom Brady calling games and Pat Mahomes kind of nipping at his heels in the GOAT conversation, he uses his new platform to kind of keep Pat Mahomes at bay a little bit? Like, does he use his words to make sure that people know, like very Michael Jordan, LeBron James? Could that happen?
I don't think Brady would do that. But I do think that we will be able to, it'll be very interesting to see in particular how he talks about Mahomes because, you know, he's done such a good job over the last few years of kind of wrapping up I think who deserves more credit, Belichick or Brady, is like mostly silly and they needed each other. But
he kind of won the war.
He made the years after they split a referendum on Bill and not on himself. And which means that really the only sort of like legacy foil he has is Mahomes. And if he's in a position where he's regularly talking about him to audiences of millions and millions, how he uses that spot, you're right to point it out, because it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I would not be shocked if he brings up that photo of Mahomes in the locker room that we saw after the AFC Championship game and likes to, you know.
Yeah, but Mahomes can just bring up Brady's combine photo.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe both these guys are just, you know, promoting the dad bod. So it could be good news for dads everywhere that are watching the NFL. Nora, where can we find all your amazing work? And then we'll let you go enjoy your Friday.
TheRinger.com. Every single album. We did like 20 minutes of film breakdown on an episode of every single album this week. We're calling it the Swifties Guide to the Super Bowl. So
I love it.
If people want a little bit more, they can check that out. And there's also a lot of Taylor talk in there too. And the Ringer NFL show. I'm on Dual Threat normally twice a week, but next week we're going to have a lot of extra content. Also the Ringer YouTube page, the Ringer NFL YouTube page. So lots of places. Go check it out.
I love it. Nora's everywhere. Nora, we appreciate you coming on the show as always. Hope you can enjoy your Pro Bowl and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Tate.
Of course. Stay right there, because when we come back, we're going to have the Ringer's very own Tyler Parker talk about the NBA. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here in Los Angeles, live in studio, and joining us now, the Ringer's very own Tyler Parker. Tyler, great to see you, man.
Dude, thrilled to be here. Thrilled to see you.
Well, you know what I usually do when you come on the show? I pepper you with questions about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Right. And today is no different. Let's start. The Thunder just beat the champs, the Denver Nuggets, 105-100. Takeaways from this game, the Thunder, like, what is the ceiling of this team? Do they need another piece, or do we feel good about where they are right now?
You know, I think it's both, right? I think you feel very good about where
second
they,
in the West,
second in the West, and to be the
all-star starter,
second youngest team in the league. I think, you know, Chet and Jalen Williams, they don't have great arguments to be all-stars, but they have decent ones, mm-hmm. right? They're not going to get in there, but that they've both, that Jalen has sort of become what he's become, that he's bloomed into this kind of two-way force that can take over in fourth quarters in just his second year. It's a really, really scary front line that's kind of blooming there. I think they do need another piece. Jalen Williams recently went down with an ankle, and in that next game was against the Nuggets last night, but even last night you kind of saw, like, you need a little bit more oomph offensively than maybe what you've got right now. And everybody's talking about it. It's a fair critique, the size thing. I mean, it's a light front line for sure. They use that to their advantage in a lot of other areas and can kind of keep big scrambling because of the way that they play. But you'd like to see them maybe go out and get another body that can go grab some rebounds and guard some of these, you know, scorers, some of these big boys.
So who is that, right? I mean, I've heard people say there's a big that they need to add to this team. Like, and there's, you know, a lot of bigs that could be on the buyout market, things like that. But who's like a player that if you sign or you make a trade for that, you're like, oh, this guy could actually change the trajectory of this team?
I think if they go that route and they get a big, you want somebody who's not going to bog down the way that they like to play. They play kind of a constant attacking style. Everybody drives. It's not some situation where if you're just a rim running big, you can kind of fit in. You need to be able to catch and put it on the deck a little bit and make some decisions with the ball. Somebody like a Kelly Olynyk in that fashion where not a lot of years left on the deal, not a lot of money, but somebody who playoff experience could come in, could lean on Jokic for a little bit if you needed him to in a situation like that, but is also not going to stop what you do well from continuing. You know what I mean? I worry about somebody like a Capella is a name you hear thrown around by some people. And I worry about a guy that plays like that fitting in on an offense that is entirely predicated on, like, all right, let's get it moving and keep it moving and be able to do something with it once we get it. And a plodding kind of big like that, even one that can give you some verticality and go catch some lobs, I don't think it's what they're going to try to do.
Who's a dream trade asset? Like, who's a guy on a team out there that maybe is not, you know, going to be in the play-in, that's on the outside looking in, that you're like, if you put them on this Thunder team, they would thrive?
I mean, we were talking before the mics went on, someone like a Cam Johnson, a big wing who could guard some of these big scorers
Finals
in the West.
Experience.
Got experience and is going to get a lot of open shots and knows what to do with those.
That would be a big swing. I mean, and you'd probably have to include some picks potentially and maybe like a Giddy. I don't know.
Who knows if the Nets are trying to hop off of somebody like that, because those are
Villanova
guys that everybody's
fans are saying yes. They are like, Mikal Bridges, you're coming to the Knicks, even if he doesn't want to. I mean, they're making it happen.
I mean, see
a trade machine every day from these Villanova fans.
I mean, it's not what we're talking about, but I would love if Bridges went to the Knicks. Wouldn't that be so fun?
Yeah, Jay Wright's next.
Tibbs' smile turns to a frown on that. Someone like that. I mean, the dream to end all dreams for Tyler Parker personally, Naz Reid.
Oh, yeah.
Wolves aren't parting with
number
perfection.
Number one in the West, yeah.
Wolves aren't parting with perfection there. But, like, in terms of, like that, that's the archetype for me. Kind of a backup big that can play starters minutes if you need him to, but, like, can move the ball and do some stuff when it's in his hands and you feel comfortable when he's catching a swing rotation out of a double on the other side, and he's the guy that's shooting it in the corner. You know what I mean? Someone like that.
Everybody's going to talk about Chet Wimby. I want to talk about another rivalry, a young rivalry that's happening in real time right now. Anthony Edwards versus SGA.
Yeah.
And more specifically, Anthony Edwards versus the refs that call fouls for SGA. I mean, he has made it known. He's pointed it out multiple times. And now they're both 1-2 in the Western Conference. And both guys get downhill. Both guys are future superstars. Do you like this little budding? It feels like a rivalry is brewing.
Yes.
I mean, it's not out there yet, but it's on the verge.
No, they need a playoff series. They need an extended playoff series to kind of consummate the rivalry.
Yeah.
And to really, like, let the fan bases kind of gnash at each other.
And I like it. Like, he's the face of Canada. Ant-Man's going to be the face of USA basketball.
It works. There's a lot of things that each fan base can say, like, well, like, look, like, Edwards is 3 years younger. And it's like, well, yeah, but they've had a little bit, that team, your team is a little bit more mature. It's had a little bit more time right. to grow. We're still young in this. You know,
Chet's
it's like,
from Minnesota. So, like, he's going against his home team that he grew up pulling for. There's a lot of layers between both teams.
Both teams are super competitive and play great defense. Like, the Timberwolves have the best defense in the league. The Thunder, I think, last I checked, were like maybe six. And their half-court defense has been solid, too. But that there are so many parallels, and then you have this Edwards trying to get through the muck of this, like, gigantic lineup that the Timberwolves have now. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they come out there with, Conley's been out, so they come out there with Nikhil Alexander-Walker, McDaniels, Edwards, Towns, and Gobert.
Everyone's 6'6 and above.
That's a gigantic lineup, right. And it's... To go, I mean, talking about
SGA's
this rivalry,
cousin, by the way, another connective
who
issue.
Guards him well,
yeah, right, like, knows him well,
or as well as someone can guard him,
right?
I mean, that you, if you want to go back and like watch like some of the most impressive 37 points you'll ever see, that the last Timberwolves Thunder game that the Wolves won and really shut the door in the fourth, but. Yeah,
Anthony Edwards got fined after that game. He said, "Please find me."
Yes, I mean, Shea goes for 37 that game. Giving it to Edwards and McDaniels and his cousin. That's as tough a 37 as you're going to see. But that Wolves team is terrifying for in a playoff series because they are just so physical. I mean, it's really almost from the like outside in a way. Like there's Gobert is for sure setting a tone down there, but you never like watch Gobert and you're like, wow, what a rugged, tough guy.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like physically, Edwards and McDaniel are bulls out there and they really, really.
And then you got Naz Reid, who's a bull.
Dude, Naz is, I mean, can't say enough good things about Naz. And he's the type of guy that will win them at least one playoff game and maybe a couple. Like
I'm thinking about the matchup of these two teams, like do the Thunder need to go get like a, not necessarily him, but like a beef stew type? Like, do we need like a big like that can you know battle with these bigs in Minnesota or Jokic? You know what I mean? Like, is that a guy that you need to go after?
It kind of is.
He might be available. Yeah, Durant's taking his minutes.
It kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier when it's like you want somebody who's able to lean on Jokic a little bit. I don't want somebody who that's all they can do. I don't need Biombo coming in and giving me six fouls, but he can't catch the ball. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, or you're playing out of a double somewhere else, the ball hits his hands and he can't reverse it. You know what I mean? Right. Like
you want to keep the fluidity of the offense.
I don't want the Thunder to be so concerned about like a weakness that they do something to paper over it that messes up the other stuff that have become strengths because of the way that they play with these like young athletic dudes that may be a little bit undersized, but can fly around and make plays.
But in general, the Thunder ahead of schedule, right? That's the feeling.
I think very, very, I mean, any Thunder fan who was, if you had presented me with, hey, at the start of February, the Thunder would be the number two team in the West. That's like before the season, you're saying, oh, they're like eons ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I don't think it's going to be feeling like house money for too much longer, because once you're a contender, then everyone starts talking you about talking about your team like that. And then you start thinking like that and all this, like, oh, we're young. You have to keep reminding yourself of that because everyone's like, no, you could win now. Mm-hmm. You could do it now.
It's 2012.
And so I'm trying to enjoy the sort of the last days of of my innocence here before it gets ripped away from me.
Before it gets turned up. Shout out to the Thunder. It's been a fun year. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tyler about Dame's return to Portland, Ben Simmons, and LeBron James maybe leaving the Lakers. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here with Tyler Parker. We talked about the OKC Thunder. We got that box checked. Now let's talk about the rest of the NBA. I want to start with Dame's return to Portland. He loses this game, but an ultimate good guy moment from him. He's shaking everybody's hands. He's having people were coming out of the crowd to shake his hand. I mean, it was a beautiful moment, but they did lose the game. After the game, Dame says, I'd like to finish my career here in Portland. How much are we buying into that? Or is this just like a politician going back to his base?
You know, I want to believe Dame.
I do too. It felt genuine.
Yeah, I like the Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, LaDainian Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. Like even if he doesn't come back and play there,
sign for a day,
mm-hmm. retire a Blazer. That's what everybody. I mean, no matter, he could go win two titles with the Bucks, and I still think when he goes into the Hall of Fame, he's probably going to be wearing a Blazers jersey.
You know what
I mean?
Right.
Like it's not going to be. I think that's how people are going to think about him, unless just some wild shit starts happening up north, which is, I guess, possible. The doctor is in, I think that Dame, if Dame is as invested in his legacy as he sort of has continually seemed to be, it makes sense that he wants to tie that bow off.
Yeah, that's why he's in Milwaukee, right? I mean, obviously Miami was the preferred choice, but he went to a contender. He said he's locked in the moment with a contender, thinks that they can contend, which leads me to my next question. How do we feel about Doc Rivers, first reactions to him being there? He had some early quotes where he's like, I wouldn't wish this on anybody, which I think was a little alarming. But other than that, I think it's been, I guess, good so far.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be good to see him win a game.
Also, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. It's a pretty good spot, right? You got Giannis and you got Dame.
Yeah, I think
second
I would,
in the East.
I think like the coaches I know, I would wish that situation on a lot of people.
Right.
You know, you get to go play for two Hall of Famers get to come
and be good.
I think Doc's an improvement for sure. A change needed to be made. Anybody watching those Bucks games could see they were just kind of listless. And a bad hang, which mm-hmm. is like almost worse. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's that.
You got Knicks fans making graphics of Giannis in a Knicks jersey. Also Thanasis in a Knicks jersey.
And if I'm,
it's getting messy out
and
there.
If I'm thinking about it from like a Bucks fan perspective, I'm like, we pull this trigger. We make this move. We got Dame here. This is supposed to be fun. Like, mm-hmm. why is this not more fun? Why am I worrying about like these defensive rotations? We've had this great defense with Brook in a drop. Why now is...
Yeah, why are the Lopez Griffin brothers in, arguing like, with our coach about the coverage that we're in? Yeah.
It's all the Stotts stuff before the season, you know.
Be great to have him there.
Yeah, right?
Dame's guy.
I get why, the change is made. Doc does not inspire boundless confidence in me.
I think he likes to get you off the scent. You know what I mean?
I think
that he's that kind of coach. Like he wants people to say, just like the Clippers, he wants them to be like, oh yeah, this isn't going to work.
Right.
And then that's when he strikes.
Yes. I think that they are better suited today to win a title than they were before they fired Griffin. And so in that sense,
it's a win.
It's a win. I think that, Doc has incentive to make it work for all the obvious reasons. He also has a gigantic get out of jail free card where it's like, look, I came in halfway through the year.
I had no training camp.
And you can almost hear Rivers saying that sort of thing in a press conference.
Yeah,
in after
a raspy
the first round,
voice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look, I mean, next year we'll have a training camp. Be like, but you can almost hear, It's
people were upset about Giannis getting the inbound, Dame inbounding it to Giannis, him going to the free throw line. That seems like all the coaches on Twitter are saying, why would you not, put Giannis there to inbound the basketball? Things like that.
I get it. If you really want to nitpick, there's the play I forget if it was the one with 50 some seconds left in the game or the one with 20 some seconds left in the game, but it basically winds up being a pick and roll with Lopez popping and Giannis is kind of diving to the rim, but like Kamara's well ahead of him because the Blazers are switching everything. And so Giannis is kind of, it's a dive, but there's nothing real about it. He's not going to get it. And to end the game,
decoy more than anything.
Yeah. Right? To end the game with Giannis, not like a seminal part of the final action is kind of weird.
Yeah. Right.
You'd like to think that that's like a believable option for the defense, you know what I mean? And it just wasn't that. And so if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm happier today than I was a couple weeks ago for sure. I'm not feeling like
I'm not dancing though.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Right.
But it's, I mean, that the Dame Giannis offense could also have no leadership to it whatsoever and put up 140 on anybody. And so it's like, what even matters? I don't know.
These are two top 75 guys. Yeah. Let's talk about Ben Simmons. He is not a top 75 guy, but he is back. And then he was out with a knee injury. He also told a reporter recently, quote, "It's always a fast break when I have the ball," which feels like a 2016 Ben Simmons quote. What are our thoughts on Simmons right now? And like, what does it look like? How many more years of Ben Simmons do we even have in the NBA?
If you're going to come with something as sort of half baked as, "It's always a fast break when I have the ball," like he's been sitting out for a while. Like I need him to have like loaded in the chamber stuff that's much more eclectic and fun.
Right.
Than "It's always a fast break when
also,
I have the ball."
Also, we've seen like generational guys that have gotten hurt, like a Derrick Rose, for example. Derrick goes away and he comes back and he's almost like more cerebral. Like you feel like he's been meditating. Like he's had like this self like reflection.
Yeah.
This does not seem to be the case for our guy Ben.
Reflection does not seem to be on his list of priorities, which
maybe looking at the mirror at his own reflection. I don't know.
Maybe, but so he wears cool glasses.
He's got fits.
My thing with him is like, he comes back in his first game. I think he has whatever,
10 and 10, right?
Or even, nice assist numbers, nice rebound numbers, stuff that you would sort of expect. He's still not looking at the goal. Mm-hmm. And unless he's looking at the goal, I don't really see a point in getting excited about what a healthy him might look like, because you're taking away any potential for you to be useful to a playoff team. It doesn't, at this point, the league has no time for somebody, no matter how athletic they are, no matter how skilled they may be in every other facet of the game. If you can't shoot, if people are going to lay off you to the point that they know you're not even going to look at the rim,
you're a liability.
You can't play.
Right.
You can't play in the
last 4 minutes of a real,
not
playoff
in any
game.
Crunch. Yeah, like right. you can't be counted on. So I hope he's healthy. I'd like to see him like be able to play for a whole month. You know what I mean? Like in
20 games, just give me 20 games and then I can talk about it in a real way. Yeah. Also, anybody that doesn't have a basketball goal in their house, that is a basketball player, that's a red flag for me always. So that's the Ben Simmons news. Last thing, let's talk about the Lakers. We're in Los Angeles. We know how this goes. KOC, our boy, says the Lakers should consider moving on from LeBron. Do you agree with this? Like, is it time? Is the show over in Los Angeles?
KOC is such a saucy mama, you know.
I like the headlines. I like the clicks. You got my attention. I read it.
I don't think the Lakers are going to be trying to move on from LeBron. They seem pretty tied together right now. Now, whether LeBron is trying to move on from them, that wouldn't surprise me.
Right. Especially if they have not promised Bronny is going to be there, which sounds like that is the scuttlebutt behind the scenes a little bit too.
Yes.
So he wants to play with Bronny.
I'm sure it was not LeBron's idea of a good time to have to carry so much of the load again this year for the Lakers. He's been, beyond solid for this being his 21st
it's
year.
It's honestly borderline ridiculous. You can't blame him for anything.
AD's been good defensively. He's been just lights out. And
if you saw their numbers, you would say this team's, you know, top six in the West.
I think if before the season you had said this is how LeBron and Anthony Davis are playing, and you said how are the Lakers doing, I would have for sure guessed they were in the top half of the West. The shooting's abysmal. The lineups suck. Ham seems not long for the team.
A lot of hands in pockets for Ham.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't, like, I like it when the Lakers play bully ball, when they get these big lineups out there and really just kind of try to beat you up. They've been a bad matchup for the Thunder the times that they've played this year because of that. Unless they can pair that with some shooting and some kind of, like, on ball invention, like some real deal kind of creativity from some of these perimeter dudes, it's not going to happen. And Ham doesn't seem invested in trying to play the kind of lineups and make the kind of moves necessary for that to happen. I never want to like say a LeBron team is finished because he's Jason and will never die. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it can't be fun to be a Laker fan right now.
Yeah, Sixers fans, they're on the watch right now because they're trying to figure out if they should make a trade for LeBron. Who knows what happens with LeBron James? It's always a good show. Tyler, where can we find all your work? And then we're going to wrap this thing up.
Ringer.com. I'll be writing there. Right. We'll have something coming before All-Star Game, I think. I just wrote a thing on Chet.
I love it.
Check it out there.
TheRinger.com. Appreciate everybody tuning into Through the Ringer. Appreciate Tyler Parker. Appreciate Nora for coming on the show. We will be back next week. No show with Sal on Tuesday, but we will be back on Friday. We'll see you then.